Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So we began. Some of you hadn't arrived, but we began singing a song which is very appropriate for our sojourn here in Sri Mayapur Dham. This song is by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from this collection called Kalyana Kalpataru. And the title is Kobe Sri Chaitanya More Hori Bena Doya, which means, when will Lord Chaitanya be merciful to me? Actually, we should always be thinking like that. When we are here in Sridham Mayapur, the land of Mahaprabhu, when will he show us even just a drop of his mercy? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Kobe Sri Chaitanya More Koribena Doya Kobe Ami Paibo Vaishnava Pada Choya. When will Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu show his causeless mercy to me by allowing me to attain the shade of the lotus feet of his Vaishnava devotee? As we see in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the beautiful narrative of a tailor who was actually Muslim. So as you know, in the strict traditional Vedic culture, a Muslim is called Mlecha, because Muslims are meat eaters. All meat eaters are termed with derogatory names like Mlecha and Yavana and so on. And this means that they are outside the purview of the Varna Ashram Dharma. There are four Varnas, lowest of all being the Shudra. But actually Shudra, you see, when we compare, when we look at modern man today, compared to modern man, Shudra is very high. We have in our Western culture some very remote idea of what a Shudra could be like. Sometimes you see in old films the English butler. So he's a servant. He's a servant of the household. But how gentrified he is. How he knows every item of etiquette. He knows exactly how the master should dress. He knows this better even than the master. You see, the master will come down and the butler will say, "Sir, tonight you're entertaining some very important guests, so you must wear your pinstripes tonight." And even the master doesn't know this, you see, but the butler, he knows everything. He knows how to make all arrangements for a very sociable interaction. He does all his services very expertly. He's very punctual. He's completely honest, trustworthy. So this gives us just some idea of what a Vedic Shudra was like. Now, of course, we use this term very loosely. Oh, he's a Shudra, which means someone who's very uncouth, very uncivilized, unrefined. But no, Srila Prabhupada writes in his Srimad Bhagavatam purport that the whole Varnashram system is actually in the mode of goodness. And then within that general system, which is all sattvic, then there are these gradations. Everyone is sattvic, but some are have a little more tinge of rajas, so they're called kshatriyas. Others have tinge of mixed rajas, tamas, so they're called vaishyas. Some have more, little more tamas in them, so they're called shudras. But basically, the whole system is in the mode of goodness. So then outside of that, those who cannot fit in at any level, then they're called mlecha yavana, because these people are not reformable. They're not reformable. They cannot even render service. That the shudras do. The shudras are not in traditional varna ashram. They're not eligible for initiation like that in the what's called the Vaidika system of elevation. Of course, there's pancharatrik system. That's another thing that's special to the Vaishnavas. There, a shudra, if qualified, could be initiated even as a brahmana. But in the Vaidika, the traditional family, more family-oriented system of spiritual progress, which we see the remnant today as the caste system in India. And shudras were not eligible to be initiated, but they could serve. They lived as servants of the higher classes. But mlecha yavana, they were too, appropriate word would be wild, too untamed, too restless, too unsense-controlled. So then they were, the king would have them live in the forest, live in the hills. In fact, still there's one region in India, in Madhya Pradesh. There's a hill region. It's very wild, rocky hills, and there are so many bandits who live up there. There was one famous recently in the news, bandit queen. Her name was Pulan Devi, so she came from that area. There's so many bandit gangs, and sometimes they're descending on trains that are coming through there. They jump on the trains and they rob everyone. So this is that type of person, mlecha yavana, uncontrolled, uncontainable, not able to fit into society. So anyway, back to the original point. There was this Muslim tailor, mlecha. Islamic religion is, of course, totally outside of Vedic reference. Like one devotee was telling me in Maharashtra when I was there, he was saying, the reason in India there's so much trouble between Hindus and Muslims is that the Muslims and their culture, they do everything opposite from the Hindus. On so many, many, many points, the Muslims are doing exactly the opposite thing. Just like, I can give you one example. Once when Srila Prabhupada was visiting London, that was in the early days before there was a temple, so he was staying at that Tittenhurst mansion of John Lennon. And one of his disciples, I'll name him Hayagriva, he has departed this world, but he was one of Srila Prabhupada's very first disciples and used to do important work for Prabhupada, writing, helping Prabhupada prepare, editing, typing, and so on. So he was very dear to Prabhupada, but he was a very wayward type of person. He was not very regulated, and he used to have problems. He would go out of the practice of Krishna consciousness and get involved in sinful activities and then come back very remorseful. So once he came to see Srila Prabhupada after such a bout with Maya, he came all the way to London to see Srila Prabhupada. And he came in the door of Prabhupada's room. And he had shaved his head completely. There was no sika, just shaved head. But he also had a beard. So he had beard and shaved head. And he came and he just wanted to see Prabhupada, so he fell down on his face, you know, full dandabats, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Then he stood up expecting Prabhupada to, you know, to say some kind words, welcome. But the first thing, Prabhupada's eyes got very big and he looked at him and said, Hai Griva, you look just like Musliman, which means you look like a Muslim. Prabhupada said, it's the Muslims, they keep beard and they shave their head. He said, but Vaishnava, he either has everything shaved or will keep long hair and beard, but not mix them like this. Shaved head and then beard. So this is just one example. And there's so many, many little points. The Muslims are doing just the opposite of the Hindus. And so this creates social agitation. Anyway, so there was this Muslim tailor here in Mayapur Dham. So what was his good fortune was that he was in the employ of Srivast Thakur, of the Panchatattva. You know, just go out on the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur road and go down that road a ways and you'll come to the site of Srivasangam. And this is where Mahaprabhu, as he was just beginning the Sankirtan movement, he would go there with Lord Nityananda and Advaita and Gadadhar. And of course Srivas lived there, so the Panchatattva was gathering there. And all the Vaishnav devotees of Navadvip would come and they would have uproarious kirtan. This is all nicely described in both Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. And the envious people would gather outside and they would make comments and so on and so forth. So this Muslim tailor, he's Mlecha, he's not anywhere in the scheme of Varna Ashram Dharma, totally outside of what is considered civilization in traditional India. And yet because he was in the employ of Srivast Thakur, he was associated with Srivast Thakur. So he was there as the kirtan was going on, just doing his duty as a tailor, sewing cloth. And Mahaprabhu showed that person special mercy. Mahaprabhu revealed just to that tailor, out of all the place was full of Vaishnav devotees of the Lord who were wearing tilak and chanting Hare Krishna regularly and engaging in kirtan daily with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, their lives were pure, following all regative principles very strictly. But to this one Mlecha, this one untouchable, Mahaprabhu revealed to him alone his combined form of Shishi, Radha and Krishna. So this Muslim was just, he was, I suppose, it's not clearly said, but I suppose he was in the courtyard sewing some cloth. That's the idea I get when I read this. It's not clearly said that's what he was doing. But in my mind's eye, I think of him just sitting there watching the cloth, and he was watching the kirtan, and he was appreciating the Hare Krishna mantra being chanted in the melody and the mridanga kartals. He was appreciating sewing the cloth and watching Lord Gauranga, so tall and golden and beautiful, swaying back and forth with his arms upraised. And suddenly he saw Sri Sri Radha and Krishna standing there. So that Muslim tailor, he jumped up, he jumped high into the air. Everyone was astonished. He jumped high, he was jumping, bouncing up and down, he was crying again and again, I have seen, I have seen, I have seen. Of course, everyone was wondering, what has he seen? So that was only known between him and Mahaprabhu. So rare that Mahaprabhu would show this. Because he's Channa Avatar. He doesn't reveal himself so obviously as the personality of Godhead. He showed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He showed Ramananda Roy. But these were very rare occasions. Generally, if someone was saying, "Oh, you, I know you are Krishna," Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, "Vishnu, Vishnu," and he would cover his ears. "Don't say such a thing." But he freely revealed himself to this, you see, in quotation marks, low-class tailor. So such mercy is possible here in Sridham Mayapur. So kobe Sri Chaitanya Mori Kore Bena Doya Kobe Ami Paibo Vaishnava Pada Chaya. When will Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu show his causeless mercy to me by allowing me to attain the shade of the lotus feet of his Vaishnava devotee? That was the qualification of this Muslim tailor. That he was in the service of Srivast Thakur. There was a friendship between them. There was some closeness. And so for this reason, Mahaprabhu was inclined to show him such mercy. So the song goes on, Kobe Ami Chadibo E Vishya Bhiman Kobe Vishnu Jani Ami Koribo Saman. When will I be able to give up this false ego, which is so deeply engrossed in sense gratification? And when will I be able to properly honor the associates of the Lord? Srila Prabhupada was traveling on a train. And he had his disciples with him. And some Indian gentlemen were coming by. And they saw Srila Prabhupada in the train. I think it was a closed compartment, first class. So they were seeing Prabhupada, and because they understood, here is a great sadhu, they wanted to enter. Now Prabhupada's disciples who were there, Western disciples, they were hoping that these gentlemen would not come in, because they didn't want to see Prabhupada bothered by them. But Prabhupada, he noticed them looking. So he said, "Come on, come on." He motioned to them. And they came in and they were very humble, bowing. "Oh, Swamiji, Swamiji," like this. And then they asked Srila Prabhupada, "Please give us your ashirvat." Now, ashirvat is the term used for the blessings of a sadhu. Often you see in India, you'll see posters of sadhus or statues of sadhus. I won't mention the names because they're generally bogus people. But they're well known. And they're keeping one hand like this. You see? And sometimes there's a slogan, "Never fear, I am here." So this gesture, this is like the symbol of ashirvat. They think there's some kind of rays coming out of the hand, which are blessing. So these gentlemen, they wanted from Srila Prabhupada ashirvat. And Srila Prabhupada, he was very grave with these gentlemen. He said, "Yes, I can certainly give you ashirvat, my blessing, but are you ready to take it?" That was his question. And this pertains to this second verse. When will I be able to give up this false ego, which is so deeply engrossed in sense gratification? And when will I be able to properly honor the associates of the Lord? That's exactly the point here. These gentlemen had come with the intention of honoring Srila Prabhupada, but it was according to their own, you see, conception. Their own, in other words, false ego, deeply engrossed in sense gratification. So they wanted Prabhupada's ashirvad, but they had a certain idea of what that should be. And Prabhupada cut right through that. He said, are you ready to take my ashirvad? Then he motioned to his disciples, who were sitting there, wearing the typical attire of Vaishnava, tilak, shaved heads. He said, see, they have taken my ashirvad. He was showing them, this is what happens when you receive my ashirvad. And so Prabhupada was indicating this. Are you ready for this? Are you ready to become devotee of the Lord? You see, Shuddha Bhakta, no other engagement except service to Krishna. So then these gentlemen, no Swamiji. And then one of them, he persisted. He said, but you see, Swamiji, I'm having one pain in my leg. So I'm hoping you, by your ashirvad, can cure this. And Prabhupada, then he dismissed them. He said, no, this is not the real thing. On other occasions, Prabhupada would say, for that kind of thing, you go see doctor. There was a time when they were planning the Radha Rasi Bihari temple in Juhu. And it was Lokanath Maharaj mentioned, because they were planning what to do with every room in the facility. And Lokanath Maharaj mentioned, there's one doctor who's very friendly and he's willing to install, to put a free clinic in one, if we give him one room. He'll have a free clinic. And Prabhupada said, I think Prabhupada initially said no, like that. And then he said, this Bombay is full of free clinics. There's so many free clinics. What we are offering here, you cannot get anywhere else. And then I think he a little bit relented and said, after we, you know, after we have divided up all the necessary activities and assigned rooms for them, Prabhupada, if there is one room left over, then we may consider this proposal. But Prabhupada considered that to be at the bottom of the list. But this is at the top of the list of the materialistic person. As Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Dharma discourses, in New Vrindavan 1972, I was there and I was so much impressed by these 7 days of Prabhupada giving the essence of the whole Bhagavatam in his morning lectures. So in one lecture he said that the materialistic people, they're primarily interested, they go to this brahmanas or the spiritual teachers with two things in mind. They have two concerns. And these concerns are not how to become free of birth and death, not how to go back home, back to God. Not those two concerns. Prabhupada said their two concerns are health and the future. This is what's foremost on their mind. This is why they go to a sadhu. They're interested in gaining from him improvement in their health, like that man complaining about his leg to Prabhupada. And they also want to know what is the future. So then Prabhupada said, so therefore the brahmanas, they used to practice Ayurveda and Jyotish. This was just to bring people to them. And then of course, once they're sitting there, then they could further instruct them on tattva, on actual spiritual matters. But this abhiman, this or ahamkara, false ego, sunk in sense gratification, this is the highest thing it can conceive. It is some mystical or magical way to have good health and to know what is the future, will I have good luck, will I come into money, You see, this, that. This is going on today. You have this so-called New Age movement, and basically that's what they're really concerned about. It's all about health, you see, some type of healing process, crystal healing or whatever it is. So many different healing processes and ways of seeing into the future. So Prabhupada said this is symptomatic of materialistic consciousness. This is as much as they can conceive in the spiritual direction. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying for an end to that. He's not praying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please, my dear Lord, give me good health. Please reveal to me what will happen next year in my life. No, he's saying, when will I be able to give up this false ego, which is so deeply engrossed in sense gratification? And when will I be able to properly honor the associates of the Lord? When will I be able to get their real ashirvat, their real blessing, which is pure devotional service to Krishna? Galabastra kritanjali vaishnava nikate dante trina kore tundaibo nishkapate. I will stand before a Vaishnava with folded hands, a cloth binding my neck, and a straw between my teeth, sincerely waiting his order. This symbolism of cloth binding my neck and straw between the teeth, these are indications of utter humility. Just like a dog has a collar around its neck, to take a straw between the teeth, this is showing utmost humility. No independence, simply awaiting the order of the pure devotee. Kandya kandya janaibo dukkha gram sangsara anala hoite magibo bishram. Weeping and weeping, I will inform him of my host of material miseries, and I will beg for relief from the blazing fire of this material world. So weeping and weeping. Kandya kandya, weeping and weeping. Prabhupada said we should chant Hare Krishna like that. Like a child crying for mother. Mother always comes when she hears the child crying. So Krishna will come if we are crying. Crying in need. You see? Child cries to mother because needs to be fed, needs to be comforted. So the spirit soul must learn to cry to Krishna in need of his shelter and cry to Krishna's devotee. Shunya amar dukkha vaishnava takar ama lagi Krishna ovidebina prachur. Hearing about all my miserable sufferings, the Vaishnava Thakur will submit an appeal to Lord Krishna on my behalf. This is very nice. Again, we have to be ready to accept the pure devotee's mercy. I used to know, and there's a devotee, he now is known by the name Prabhupada Das. I believe he's initiated by Hridayananda Maharaj. And he's in South America, at least that's the last place I heard he was. But actually he knew Srila Prabhupada in 1966. But he was not ready to surrender to Srila Prabhupada. I met him in Boston. He was running a second-hand shop in Boston. That's where I joined ISKCON. And I used to like to talk to him because he had so many interesting stories about his meetings with Srila Prabhupada. So he, when he was living in New York, before coming to Boston, he was a kind of hippie fellow, long hair, beard, and he was married. And he used to have a lot of trouble with his wife. They were always quarreling. So in misery, he would go to see Srila Prabhupada in his apartment behind the Matchless Gifts storefront. And he would come before Prabhupada. Prabhupada would be sitting at a low table, and there was a shelf behind him with cloth on it. And he would come before Prabhupada and he would unburden his heart. Srila Prabhupada, I don't get along with my wife, or Swamiji, they called him at that time. Swamiji, my wife and I, we don't get along. There's always quarreling in our house. My mind is so disturbed. I don't like to go home because I know as soon as I walk in the door, there's going to be sharp words exchanged, and it's so bad. So he would go on like this. Then Prabhupada would sit and listen like this. And then at one point he would turn and he would reach behind him and he would take one of his sannyas lungis and he would hold it out to him like that. No, Swamiji, no, no. No, I'm not ready for that. Then Prabhupada said, well, then you have to go on suffering. He would put it back. So, hearing about all my miserable sufferings, the Vaishnava Thakur will submit an appeal to Lord Krishna on my behalf. Then, Vaishnava, ovedane Krishna doyamoy, eheno pamara prati hobhina sadoy. By the prayer of the Vaishnava, the all-merciful Lord Krishna will then become compassionate toward such a sinner as me. Vinodir Nivedana Vaishnava Chorane Kripa Kori Sange Loho E Akinchane. Bhaktivinod, praise unto the lotus feet of the Vaishnava. Please be merciful and take this worthless person into your association. So the point of this song is that Lord Chaitanya's mercy is available to us here and now, but through the association of his devotees. So therefore the key to all success in spiritual life is to perfect our association with the devotees. This is the, they have this term litmus test. It's a kind of scientific test. We don't have to explain it, but Krishna consciousness is a science, Prabhupada always said. It's a spiritual science. So in science, there are tests. There are tests which indicate whether you're performing the process properly or not. If you perform it properly, then you should get this result. And you can test. And if you're not getting the result, then you have to go back to the beginning and see what you have done wrong. So in this Krishna consciousness, it's actually our association with devotees that is the test, our quality of association with devotees. That is the test of our advancement. So, if our association with devotees is troublesome, or fraught with anxiety and argumentation and, you know, sparks, distrust, Prabhupada said it should be love and trust. But if it's the opposite thing, you see, discord, distrust, not harmonious, then something is wrong. Something is wrong with us. Maybe something is wrong with the other one too. It is said it takes two bangles to jangle. But at least it means there's something wrong with us. So in fixing the problem, where do we start? It's sure something's wrong with us. So what is the point of trying to start with the other one? You see, advising him how he can improve his behavior, trying to instruct him, make him humble, when you yourself have the problem in the first place. So therefore that project of reforming the quality of our association must begin in our own heart. So we must learn how to nicely associate with the devotees. And in this way, we'll be able to receive the blessing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Sri Krishna, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has so nicely explained here. So again, it is after 5 o'clock. We have to stop. Will there be any question? Yes?
Kumar, as you mentioned about the Brahmanas, sometimes they invite people related to this Ayurveda and even astrology and like that. I remember I spoke with some sannyas who was visiting. He said that in some centers they have like direct and indirect preaching. There is yoga classes just to bring people in, but then of course preach ultimately then the point like, now, well, this is the practical thing, but in our case we are facing the thing that in order to get like better facilities to ISKCON from city or some, we have to have some, besides of the normal spiritual activities, also some, should we say, that kind of easily understandable functions. But then there seems to be some risk also involved. That is there any quotation or Prabhupada or something which, like the direct indirect preaching done in temple or going to that direction when it goes over the limit of healthy temple?
Well, as far as I know, I've heard about this, and these are, as far as I've understood, these are centers. The yoga centers they have in Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, I think that was
the best. I think these are centers separate from the regular ISKCON temple. Prabhupada spoke, I remember, in New York in the 1970s. He spoke of what he, I don't know if he used the term, but it was known as halfway house. This was Prabhupada's own idea, that there should be a place where persons who are interested in Krishna consciousness, but, you know, not up to the full standard whereby they could live in the temple, but they would be able to gather there and do service, hear, chant, even stay there. And this would be to as a middle step to get to the other shore of direct spiritual life. And I've seen in Western India, north of, I believe it's north, anyway, it's about an hour and a half away from Mumbai, there is a very prestigious technical college called the IIT, Indian Institute of Technology. This is the most highly rated such school in the whole country. So the devotees, they keep an apartment there nearby the school. And it's like that, it's a kind of a halfway house. So the students are coming, and there are different levels of commitment. They're chanting, not all of them, 16 rounds. But there is different engagements for them. So I think this yoga center and all such kind of things, they do fit into this general model Prabhupada gave. But it is specialized. It's not. Prabhupada didn't conceive of this as being within the temple itself. I'm not saying that. It means, therefore, if you have a big temple building, there's so many rooms are available, that you couldn't do something like that in the temple. That may be possible, but Prabhupada himself didn't conceive of such a program for being in the temple. And then you know, then there's the question of who will do this type of program. They have to be skillful. They have to actually be able to preach in that way. Okay? Yes? This is why one has to have a spiritual master. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is Arjuna's spiritual master. And it is Lord Krishna who is telling Arjuna that you do not have the adhikar. That means you do not have the qualification to take sannyas. This was Arjuna's proposal to Krishna in the very beginning of the Gita, first chapter. In the early second chapter, he uses the word, well, he uses a form in Sanskrit, a form of the word bhikshu. So bhikshu means a sannyasi beggar. Like when a sannyasi, traditionally, he's supposed to beg from door to door for his meals. And those meals he takes are called bhiksha. So therefore, he's called a bhikshu, one who begs for his meals. And sometimes we see the title, even Prabhupada was accepting that title, Tridandi Bhikshu, which literally means a beggar who carries a tridanda. A bhikshu is just another way of saying sannyasi, but it literally means beggar. So Arjuna is proposing to Krishna, I will live by begging. And when he makes this statement, he uses a form of the word bhikshu. In other words, he's saying to Krishna, I'll take sannyas. And Krishna tells Arjuna, you can't do that. You don't have the adhikar. You don't have the qualification. So, the Bhagavad Gita could have gone another way if Arjuna had that qualification. It's very interesting. If Arjuna had that qualification, perhaps then Krishna would have said, alright, you just leave this battlefield, go. And then, you know, Bhagavad Gita would be a very different book. But because Arjuna was told by his spiritual master, Sri Krishna, you cannot take sannyas. You have to do your duty. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita unfolds as it does. And at the end of Gita, Arjuna, he enters the fight, he enters the battle. So, in all these kind of questions, you see, the spiritual master is, it's like when you're driving a car, how do you know how fast you're going? You have to have this, what they call in America, speedometer. In Europe, they call it tachometer. But it's this, you know, instrument on the dashboard, which shows you how fast you're going. So you're driving through some city, there's a posted speed limit. So you have to check your speedometer against the sign. The sign says 40 kilometers limit, 40 kilometers per hour. So you cannot let the needle go over 40. Now if your speedometer is broken, you see, then you don't know how fast you're going. You get pulled over by the police. You were doing 60, you know, on a street posted 40. and you say, oh, I'm sorry, the speedometer was broken, but that's no excuse. So spiritual master is like speedometer. He lets you know. You see, how you should proceed. Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you for coming. We have to stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.